Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Thursday's edition of A Podcast to Be Named Later. I am your host, Chris Mitchell. We do this every single Thursday. It's the Fantasy Fix Thursday. Excited to be providing it for you today. I've got my friend, my man's best furry four-legged friend, my co-pilot, my sidekick, Cody the dog. He's joining me here. He's sitting here sharp as a whip, this dog is, by the way. He knows more about fantasy than probably at least five of you out there. So he's watching the program. He doesn't come on. He doesn't even bark. But he's here listening in, loving the show here on Thursdays. And, of course, what's not to love when you've got George Kurtz and Brandon C. Williams from RotoExperts.com coming on board to talk about the closer report. We got to look at the ninth inning. It's a fragile, schizophrenic, lunatic type of situation on a week-to-week basis. Some weeks a little cooler than others, but there's definitely a hot seat in the ninth inning, and we'll get into that with George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com. Then we'll talk about the waiver wire, and that obviously is an evolving situation every single week. If you do it, I play in a dynasty league, a very deep, I think it's 20 teams. It might be 15, but it's a pretty deep league. It's dynasty, so you do have to cut a few players every year, but for the most part, everybody's roster stays the same year to year to year, which means you really have to work the wire to try to find anything even remotely of value. So on any given week, a lot of times I end up just picking up the hot bat. I picked up Tyler Wade this week. Granted, he's only really batting against right-handed pitching. I don't know why that's the case because I checked him out. He doesn't have any split issues. But nonetheless, Girardi's decided to promote the rookie in order to bat just against right-handed pitching, and he'll probably be demoted once Starlin Castro returns. But nonetheless, the league is that deep that I'm looking at guys that mediocre every single week. So the hot bat is finding a way into a lot of my rosters, and Brandon C. Williams will be bringing that. He brings it every single Thursday. He's going to be bringing it again this week. I do want to get into a little bit of some extra side stuff with both of my fantasy experts, because while they are going to provide the close report as well as the waiver wire report, I want to ask them about Trea Turner, because I saw that there was a debate in one of the social media groups that I follow from time to time. And the question was, and this guy posts some weird things, but he posted about Trea Turner and he said, is he better than Billy Hamilton? Suggesting that somehow before the season, some people thought that Trea Turner was Billy Hamilton or was equivalent to Billy Hamilton. I don't know where he got that, because I never saw that kind of commentary on Trea Turner. I saw him, the debate was he a first-round pick? Was he going to be overdrafted this year? And so I wanted to, that was what was interesting. He's, I don't know where he got the Billy Hamilton thing, but I want to ask George Kurtz and Brandon C. Williams their opinions of Trea Turner's season so far. I thought entering draft season that he would be overdrafted. I thought he'd be a good player, a very good player. I mean, he had a phenomenal season last year. But like Gary Sanchez the year before, sometimes these guys come up and have just monster stretches. But you can't assume that he's going to be able to – you take a 60 or 80 or 100-game, you know, small sample and say, okay, if he did this and that, I multiply whatever to percentages to 162, and all of a sudden there are his numbers. I mean, that you can't do that, even though people always do. So because of that, I thought, okay, the guy has to come down a little bit. He's a heck of a player, but he's not going to be as exponentially as good as he was last season. That was just an amazing run, like Jake Arrieta with the Cubs. An amazing run, but eventually he has to come down to earth and be the very good player that I expect him to be. So I thought he would be drafted a little bit too high. I thought that having to draft him anywhere between 8, 9, 10, or 13, 14, 15, even though he was going to qualify at shortstop, I assumed that. Going into the season, some people were talking about him as an outfielder. I said, the Nationals are playing him at shortstop. Why are people even discussing him as an outfielder other than he has dual position eligibility, which enhances his value? But I always thought that he was going to be a shortstop. I never for a second thought that that wasn't going to be the case. But now look at the way he's playing through 67 games this year. 7 home runs, 33 stolen bases, a .277 batting average. Only .318 OBP in leagues that play that. So that's not bad. It's not going to hurt you, but it's not going to win you a league or anything like that. But still, .277 is a very good batting average. In today's today's the age where we've got a lot of guys hitting .230, .240. .277 is something to be more than happy about. But 7 home runs and 33 stolen bases through only 67 games, which projects out, I think, fairly now that we can probably expect him to hit somewhere between 15 to 20 home runs each season and steal somewhere between 45 and 60 bases for the next two or three or four years. That's my projection on what you can probably expect from him. I want to get George's opinion and Brandon C. Williams' opinion on Trey Turner. Then we'll get to the closer report. Then we'll get to Brandon Williams with the waiver wire report, the hot and cold batters, the hot and cold on the bumps, and the ad drop buy or sell. I like to look at who's been added and who's been dropped recently and see whether you believe they should have been added or you believe they should have been dropped and vice versa. So I like to figure out I like to talk about that and then actually get into the waiver wire report from Brandon. So that's on the agenda today. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell. If you want to follow me on Twitter, at CJMitch73. If you want to read my fantasy content, you can head on over to rotoexperts.com or minorleagueball.com. If you want to follow us on Facebook, you can do that. It's a podcast to be named later. We like talking baseball there. I post links to all of our podcasts. So if you're not listening live, you can always get the links there and listen to any of the podcasts, whether it's the current one or even some of the previous ones. So you can head on over to there. But right now, let's bring in George Kurtz from rotoexperts.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at George Kurtz. George, fantastic weather, 4th of July week coming up here, and there's nothing better than fantasy baseball and baseball in general at this time of the year. How you doing, my man?
Well, there's nothing else going on at this time of the year, right? So basketball and hockey are done with their championships. Football, we will have training camp a little bit, but not quite there yet.
I have never had a problem praising something, even if it had to be a low bar. And if that means that there's nothing better because there's nothing else, I'm fine with that. That's okay. I'm an Edwin Diaz guy. We're going to get into the close report, but real quickly, as I mentioned in the intro, let me just ask you about Trey Turner quickly, because I do, even though you're here to talk about the ninth inning, I value your opinion on just about anything fantasy related. So I want to ask you about Trey Turner. Like I said in the intro, I saw him going somewhere between 9 and 10 to 12 to 15 range, depending on the league and the insanity of his love versus not. I thought that was too high at draft time. But I'm looking now at what he's doing, and I'm saying that was probably, not only did he probably already earn his draft slot, let's just say 10. Let's say he was drafted between 10 and 12. Not only has he probably already earned that as being a fair slot, it's probably undervalued. He should have been drafted earlier. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on, what did you think of him coming into the season? What do you think of him now? And then I do want to ask you, going forward, my argument, the first thought that came to my mind, because I'm a little bit crazy, is that, you know what, if you're in a dynasty league, I'm not a position scarcity guy, so I don't usually like players who play all that much more because they play a difficult position, but you can't ignore that it at least enhances their value a little bit. We've got a shortstop who can hit maybe 15 homers a year, maybe steal 55 or 60 bases and hit 275. My thought was, all this Trout trade talk earlier in the year, is now Trey Turner the number one fantasy player in fantasy baseball? Give me your thoughts on Trey Turner. We got some silence there, George. If you put it on mute or whatever, we may have lost you a moment there.
Yeah, I'm having some problems with my internet connection here, so I apologize for that. As far as Trey Turner is concerned, I mean, I like Turner. My problem with him was what you already mentioned in your opening. I had no problem with the player. I wasn't taking him at the end of the first round. I wasn't taking him in that 10 to 12 range, mainly because I just think there are better players overall. I think he's a great player. I think he's going to do everything you just said he's going to do. I mean, we may be selling him light on 55, 60 bases. Maybe he's going to steal 70 to 80. He's running wild of late. Home runs are going to be probably in the mid-teens, somewhere around 15, around 16, somewhere there. Average, it'll be good. Not great, but it's going to be probably around 280 to 90 range, but that helps as well. So what's not to like? You know, I still think he's a second-round player. You know, he stayed healthy this year, which is nice. That Washington offense has just been incredible. So many players hitting the cover off the ball there. It's good to see that. So I like Turner very much. I do. I don't think he's the number one player in fantasy. No.
So if you do assume, let's say, 275 with 15 home runs and 60 steals, if he does that over the next consistently year after year for the next 3 or 4 years, that's still not the best player in fantasy. Was that like maybe top five then? He'll be a top five pick, but you would rather have home runs? Something, is that your argument?
Well, yeah, because when you look at the categories he's going to hit, I mean, I'm still going to take Mike Trout. Right? Trout's still going to be number one. Trout's not going to steal 70 bases. He'll steal somewhere around half that, 25, 30. And I'll take the 30-plus home runs, the 100-plus RBIs, the runs he comes with, and the average. So Trout's still easily number one for me. And then you got a couple of these rookies. I mean, Clay Bellinger and Aaron Judge, if they keep doing what they're doing, It's once again, small sample size. Judge has now played not even a year yet. Bellinger obviously is less than a year. So we certainly need to see more from these guys. And Turner's sort of in that same played a year yet. You know, if you combine this for all of his three seasons, I think he's barely at a year. 140, he's played 167 games in the major league. So, you know, we want to see what happens there. But all signs are positive here. He's somebody I certainly wouldn't complain if he was on my team. I know you said you don't care about position scarcity or all the positions he's eligible at. A lot of that's going to go away anyway. But he's an exciting young player on a team that should be good for at least for the next couple of years. So I don't see any downside here, but I wouldn't have him as my number one. Like I said, Trout, to me, is still number one, and I probably still got to consider his own teammate, Bryce Harper, ahead of him as well.
And I heard a lot of talk early in the season, in draft season, that stolen bases are down, that home runs are up. First off, do you think the ball's juiced? There's been a lot of talk about it. I've heard talk, not that anyone knows it is or isn't, but that there's definitely some room for the manufacturers to develop the ball so that it could be altered, essentially fitting the description of juice. Do you believe the ball is juiced? And I remember writing an article for Baseball America probably 4 years ago now. It's been a while. Where they wanted me to talk about how home runs were down and how they should approach your fantasy season based on a lesser home run based league, but now home runs are on the rise and they're flying all over the place. I did not expect Aaron Judge to hit more than 25 home runs. I didn't expect Josh Bell to hit more than 20. I didn't even really analyze Cody Bellinger all that much. I wasn't sure when he would even be promoted, never mind whether he might hit 40 as a rookie. So all my rookie projections essentially don't apply anymore, and I don't think it's because I don't know things. I don't think it's because I'm clueless. I follow the prospects. I follow rookies. I know what they traditionally do in a normal season, and this home run-wise, this does not look anything like a normal season. Is this a fluke? Is it a one-time thing? Is it a slow, gradual increase, or our home runs going to start coming as if it was the steroid era, and now we almost have to value steals more because home runs are no longer rare, or at least they're no longer in decline at the very least.
Well, we've seen this before, right? I mean, we've had the juice ball area before where all of a sudden balls are flying out of the park. The ratings are up. So I don't think Manfred's going to be in any rush to launch an investigation here to find out why these balls are flying out, assuming he didn't authorize it in the first place. So, like I said, the balls are definitely flying out. I think that's pretty easy to see. We've seen all these studies that are being done now, and some of these aren't so small. I think I saw one yesterday. I think it was Rob Nye who might have posted it about a study that was done. It was done over like 140,000 baseballs, something silly like that. And the coefficient of the drag is definitely going up. So, I think the balls are juiced. Whether it's done intentionally or not, that I don't know. You know, maybe it is just that the balls are made better. Yeah, you've heard Justin Verlander come out and say the seams are depressed, so pitchers can't quite get that grip on the ball. So, to turn that wrist, to get that curveball going, get the slider going. And also, if the seams are depressed, it means there's less drag on the ball as it's hit. So that could lead to the ball going a few feet further. You bring up someone like Aaron Judge. I think I had him around 30 home runs. I mean, the man's a monster. It's kind of a joke. When you look at him at first base next to some other – he was on first base next to Chris Davis when the Yankees played Baltimore. Chris Davis is a big man. Aaron Judge made him look like a kindergartner. I mean, that's how big Judge is. So if he makes any kind of connection with the ball, it's going. It's just a matter of how far. I mean, it's really silly right now how big this man is and how strong he is. And when he's made adjustments at every level. And those adjustments have led to his success. Clay Bellinger, I did not see this from. I always thought he was a top prospect. I did not see him hitting, 24 home runs. And, in Chavez Ravine, Dodger Stadium, not a hitter's ballpark, not a home run ballpark at all. So that's a surprise to me. And I think that's what's probably raising some eyebrows here. Maybe you mentioned Bell as well. Also raising some eyebrows. Pittsburgh, PNC, beautiful ballpark, pitcher's park, not a hitter's park. So there's very little doubt in my mind, Chris, that the balls are – I don't want to use the term juice because I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if it's done on purpose or it's just, better technology nowadays. But there's very little doubt in my mind that the balls are changed from how they've been the past couple of years. As you ask my opinion, I have a funny feeling baseball knew about this, and they're not complaining. As I mentioned, the ratings are up, and we're all talking about it, which is good for baseball as well. There's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah, absolutely, and I agree with you about Bellinger. I look at things from value, overvalued versus undervalued. So I don't really look at players based on – I mean, I look at their ceilings. I evaluate how good I think they can be. I do all of those things. But in fantasy, I look at value. Is a guy a draft value? Can you get Are you selling high or buying low on a player? That's how I really, most of the time, that's the perspective that I take looking at players. And then, you know, that is all. I determine those things based on how good or bad I think a player or how mediocre I think a player is going to be. So, of course, I consider those things. I thought Bellinger was one of the more underrated top prospects, but I didn't. I mean, he would have been there on opening day if the Dodgers knew he was going to possibly hit 40, 45 home runs. So I think it would be almost idiotic for anyone to try to claim they knew this was coming from any of these young guys, never mind Bellinger. So I agree with you on that, absolutely. I'm more stunned by Judge, because while I knew that he had the raw power to hit 25 home runs, he hasn't had the approach at the plate to be the monster that he is now. I mean, he's no longer 25. Obviously, he's getting there. He's never had the approach where he really wanted to drive the ball in the minor leagues like he does now. He always had, of course, the natural raw. I mean, he won the home run derby in college, so. Not only is he enormous, but he's always had the raw power to go with it. He just didn't quite have the same approach in the minor leagues that he does now. And he's hitting everything. I mean, if anything, that's the one thing. He was not very good last season. I think he hit under 200 in a very small sample size, but he didn't hit much more than 220. And he struck out a ton. He's still striking out a lot, but he's hitting like 320. I mean, that's really the stunner to me is how much contact he's making. And I agree with you on that point. If he continues to make even 275, 280 kind of batting average contact, he's going to hit 35, 40, 45 home runs unless he goes back to his old approach, which was more almost protecting the zone or swinging in a lot of bad balls out of it. If he goes back to doing that, then he'll decline. But now that he's kind of figured it out a little bit, I don't see why that would happen. So obviously projections going forward will be significantly different. But it's crazy how the ball is flying out of here. We're talking with George Kurtz from rotoexperts.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at George Kurtz. Obviously, we're talking baseball in the ninth inning here, but he does baseball, football, hockey, pretty much anything fantasy related he's on doing it. And today we're talking about the ninth inning. George, what's the hot and the cold, the rumors going on at the ninth inning right now? Tell me what we need to know as far as the closer position.
All right, so we've had some I guess some changes at the close, but some good, some bad. We know in Baltimore, we finally have a target date for Zach Britton to return. It's July 5th. So your Brad Brock days are coming to an end shortly. When Britton comes back, I'm not necessarily all going to throw Brad Brock away. I want to hold on to him for at least probably a week, maybe even 2 weeks, maybe 2 weeks as far as fantasy is concerned, just to make sure Britton's healthy. I don't want to see what happened last time happen again. Britton came back. We automatically dropped Brock, and Britton suffered it all. I guess re-injured the forearm. So I want to be careful there. Not necessarily going to dump him. Cleveland's become interesting, right? Terry Francona sort of threw us for a loop last week when he said he wanted to give Andrew Miller a break, so he was putting him in the closer role. You know, I guess the theory there being, well, if he's a closer, then he won't pitch more than one inning. You know, maybe there'll be days where he don't pitch him at all because they don't need a save. But then we found out, what, a day or two later, that Allen went on paternity leave. Allen has since returned. He's back in the ninth inning, but not pitching well. I think he's giving up runs down three straight outings. Doesn't look good. Blew a save over the weekend. The other two outings, I don't believe, a save opportunity. So you might want to keep an eye on there. There's nothing wrong with Allen's peripheral numbers. I mean, his ERA is still below 3. Just that Miller's numbers are fantastic. I think Miller's ERA is below 2, and he's striking everybody out. So keep an eye on there. But it's been more cute than anything else. We've heard teams like the Detroit Tigers and the New York Mets, they're open for business as far as trades. And the problem with fantasy owners is this. If you own Justin Wilson or Addison Reed, if either one of those or both those players are traded, they may not be closers with their new team. They're more than likely going to go to a competitive team, and a competitive team doesn't need a closer. So you may run into some issues there eventually. So once again, something to be wary of. Miami, they could trade A.J. Ramos. Same thing there. I think Miami pretty much right now, if it's not nailed down, it could get dealt. I think they're in a free-for-all. And sort of since the team is up for sale, they'll let the new owners worry about putting the team up. You know, I guess spending money. They want to get rid of as much of their contracts as they possibly can, and Ramos could be on the move there. The Angels are fun. You know, Bedrosian came back about 10 days ago, has been using the seventh inning at first, then the ninth inning. Hasn't pitched great. Houston Street is now back. He pitched in the seventh inning. We're hearing Norris could come back over the weekend. Socha has never trusted Bedrosian. And all these injuries, and now he's not pitching all that well, could lead him to keep Norris in that role. Wouldn't shock me. Really wouldn't shock me if all three of these guys gather saves from here on out. Norris, Bedrosian, and Street. It's a situation I'd like to avoid if I can. St. Louis, oh, blew it up. I mean, I was so – what's today? I was, because I was angry Tuesday night when Swung blew that save, but Carlos Martinez cost me a few DFS leagues. So that was frustrating. Oh, hasn't pitched well all season. We thought maybe he was safe because Rosenthal didn't pitch well that game either. But last night, another save opportunity, Rosenthal pitched, and he gathered the save. Now, perhaps, just perhaps, he got the save because, hey, O was getting the night off. He pitched too many games in a row, too many innings, too many pitches, whatever it might be. Or perhaps we're seeing a changing of the guard here. Rosenthal hasn't pitched well either, but he has closed before. Maybe Matheny, who's starting to feel the pressure there in St. Louis, is finally just going to make a change there. So keep an eye on that. San Fran, Melanson's on the DL. They're going to Sam Dyson. Good luck to you. I don't know if that matters. Not that good a team anyway, not getting all that many wins. Toronto, we heard over the weekend, Roberto Osuna was dealing with some anxiety. Missed a save opportunity, I believe it was on Friday. Saturday, didn't pitch. Sunday, he did pitch, struck out the side. He's back this week. I don't think there's anything to worry about there. You could start Osuna like you normally would. And Washington, still a dumpster fire. I mean, really. You signed K-Rod, his ERA is above 7, whip is closer to 2 than to 1. Isn't that the definition of pouring more gas on the fire? Cody Glover still not throwing. Now you find out he's got shoulder inflammation in addition to his back injury. No idea when he's going to get on the mound next. Washington needs to make a trade, whether it's for Robertson, I mentioned Addison Reed, Wilson, whatever it might be. They need to make a trade to get an established closer.
Who would possibly replace Ramos? Because I kind of banked on Ramos either outright losing the job coming into the season. I traded for Kyle Barraclough in a couple of my keeper leagues. I traded away Ramos and actually traded for Barraclough with the assumption that eventually Ramos would either lose the job and, of course, possibly end up or be traded. If he is gone, who do you like best in that Marlin bullpen?
I would assume it's still Barraclough because we're hearing David Feltz being mentioned as a trade possibility too. Not that Feltz would be the closer anyway. He's more of a Adam Warren type. Almost said Aaron. The guy can go multiple innings, so a guy can bridge you from the if he needs to come in at some point in the sixth and then pitch the seventh to get to the eighth. So I don't think it'll be Phelps anyway. Barraclough's the guy I would want. Tozawa hasn't pitched all that well. I don't think he's getting the shot. So I'm still banking on Barraclough. But if they make all these trades, does it matter? How many saves are you hoping for?
True. I'm looking at it more as a long-term thing because Barraclough was amazing last season. So I was looking and thinking, okay, maybe Ramos loses the job. And I didn't trade for Barraclough in keeper leagues in order to get 5 or 6 saves in the second half of the season. I was thinking that maybe Barraclough becomes a regular. I don't know if that will be the case, but that was my hope and my thought going into it. I'm going to put you on the spot here. This is a tough one and probably unfair, but I have no problem doing that. And if you don't have the answer, you don't have the answer. But I've noticed that Barraclough's got a lot of wins recently. And if you're not in a holds league, and if you're not, and you don't have a closer that's getting saves, but you need relievers anyway, I look for some relievers who get a lot of wins. Are there any relievers out there that, A, may have a chance at eventually earning saves, so that would enhance their value, but at least you've noticed that they're really high up on the win situation? So, I mean, you don't really like to chase wins, but if you got to fill the reliever spot anyway, why not put a guy that might actually fluke a win or two every couple weeks? Have you noticed any relievers winning more games than maybe some of their cohorts?
I think you're smoking the good stuff if you're trying to chase wins from relievers. I mean, come on, it's hard enough to chase wins from starters. More or less, hopefully, you needed chasing wins from relievers. I have guys you could look at. And these are guys I'll look at because I think the closer right now could be dealt. Mauricio Cabrera at Atlanta or Aridis Viscaino. We've seen them pitch before. That's somebody I'm interested in that I think could get some W's or really save opportunities as you go down. Other guys, I'm big on, I think you and I talked about this last week, Tommy Conley with the White Sox. I think he's the next closer there once Robertson is dealt. But wins, I mean, the White Sox aren't going to win many games as it is. That's the problem with all these guys, just trying to get a W. Trying to get a save is hard enough. A W is just really beating yourself over the head. Joaquin Soria could be in play here if the Royals deal Herrera. He could be in play anyway, as the Royals are playing so much better right now. I don't know who closes in Detroit if and when they deal Justin Wilson. Could be Alex Wilson, maybe Shane Green. That would be very intriguing, to say the least, of what direction they go on there. I already mentioned the mess that is the Angels, with Bedrosian, Street, and in Norris. I mean, there are really three guys there. All of them could close. Maybe one closes. Maybe it's a committee. Who knows? Not something I want to deal with there. Already mentioned Barraclough there in Miami. The Mets, who closes there if and when Reed is dealt? You know, Blevins could be dealt as well, though I don't think Blevins would get the closing job anyway. I think he's more of a lefty guy. Is it Hansel Robles, Josh Edgen? They really wouldn't have a closer there, so really no one I'm dying to get there anyway. Rosenthal is somebody I probably want to grab right now. I do wonder if he's going to get that job over O pretty much any minute. I don't trust Dyson at all. And that's really it when you look at it. You can guess on one of the Washington guys, but that, like I said, that's a dumpster fire. That's a train wreck.
Last question before we let you get out of here. Maybe it's just me being greedy and looking out for myself here, but my dog Cody would hate me if I didn't ask it. How are you dealing with Juris Familia right now? With obviously, he's been out for a very long time, but I've been holding for a little while thinking he would have some value in the second half, and I really like him as a closer when he's on the field. But it's looking – I don't know what we're expecting. What's the update on Familia, and should I still be holding on to him, and should I continue to hold him all the way, or have I been wasting my time all these months, and should I – with all these 10-day DL guys, I have guys who are injured taking up roster spots, and I'm really feeling the pinch. How do I manage Familia?
I would have thrown him away by now. There's no way I'm holding onto a closer for that long. And here's the other problem. Even if he does come back, let's say he comes back mid-August. The Mets are already – they're 11, what, they're 11 games out of the division, 11.5 out of the wild card or something like that. They have no chance. The season's over for the Mets, and they know it. I already mentioned there, they said they're open for business. They want to make some trades here. How many games are they going to save down the stretch? You know, so I don't think for in this year with all the DL guys, unless you have unlimited DL, no, I'm not holding on to Familia. We did hear that he's beginning a throwing program in Florida, which is going to start next week. So which means you think it's like spring training again, and they're going to be slow. They're not going to rush this. My guess would be August would be the earliest he'd return. And there will be some value there. Don't get me wrong. Every closer has value. And if Familia is back, you know, 2 months of Familia could get you easily, you know, wouldn't shock me if 12 to 15 saves. So obviously that's going to have value. But I would have held on to it from the beginning. I'm not holding on to a closer when he's out for 2.5, 3 months. I think that's suicide, especially this year for me. At this point, you're talking another month. Yeah, it really comes down to how much you need saves. Odds are I'm throwing him away, and I want to save one of my other guys.
Sounds good. George Kurtz from rotoexperts.com providing us with the close report. You can follow him on Twitter, at George Kurtz, and, of course, all of his fantasy content from sport to sport to sport, baseball, hockey, and, of course, baseball in the ninth inning here with the close report. Thanks, George. Appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you next week.
Oh, same here, Chris. Everybody, have a happy July 4th.
Exactly. Absolutely, which I'm excited about as well. Let's get going here. We've got Brandon C. Williams on from rotoexperts.com to provide the waiver wire report. Love to talk about the ninth inning. Now we're going to talk about everything else, which is baseball and the waiver wire report. Let's invite Brandon C. Williams in from the program. Again, he writes for rotoexperts.com. Recently endeavored in covering the Canadian Football League from a fantasy perspective, which is interesting. But you can follow him on Twitter for everything that he does. He covers basketball, he covers football, he covers baseball, and now, of course, the Canadian Football League. Follow him on Twitter, at BCWilliams71. Brandon, thanks for coming on to the program. We get you for a little while before you got to get the heck out of here. But thanks for coming on today. How's everything going on with you?
Going along pretty well. Right now, it's one of those times where it seems like I'm going to be doing a lot of juggling. You know, and not only am I getting ready for week two of the Canadian Football League, a big rematch between Ottawa and Calgary from last week. Those were the two teams that competed in their Grey Cup championship. They went to a 31-31 tie last week, so they'll see if they can sell us one out tonight. Yesterday, you know, we broke down the Chris Paul trade and how that's going to impact both the Rockets and the Clippers. And we've got free agency that's going to kick in on Saturday. So between that, you know, the CFL, baseball, of course, and, you know, NFL training camps, you know, a little less than a month away, a busy time, but it's also a very fun time.
Let me ask you real quickly about the Canadian Football League, because it is football, obviously, and it's 95% the same as the NFL, but there are some meaningful differences, and therefore, because of those differences, as I understand it, there is a different approach, and there's a different skill set and a different type of player that can be successful with the Canadian. For example, Doug Flutie was a god in the Canadian Football League, while in the NFL, he barely got an opportunity. He seemed to earn it in Buffalo, and yet they didn't seem to want to give it to him, so Warren Moon was successful in both, so that you can be good in both, Or you can be a guy like Doug Flutie, who's amazing in one and for the most part irrelevant, or unfortunately, deserved or not, in the other. What's the difference from a fantasy perspective that you see when you're analyzing the Canadian Football League versus when you analyze the NFL?
Running back is a very important position because, you know, you've got eight teams that are playing each week. You know, there are nine teams, but that night's going to have a bye, of course. You know, you've got to get a running back. You have to invest in a running back. And the thing is that with the way the CFL is, you know, you've got to make sure you get a top-end running back. Last season, they only had three running backs go over 1,000 yards. So you've got to make sure you get a running back. Second of all, it's a passing league. It wasn't really the case, you know, years ago, but it's a heavily dominated passing league because you only get two downs to gain 10 yards. So a lot of the passing that you see is the underneath variety, the short to intermediate stuff. Doesn't mean that you've got guys who can't run under them and go for the deep balls, but quarterback and running back are very important. I would probably say quarterback is more important because of the fact that they throw the ball about 65-70% of the plays that are run in a typical Canadian Football League game. I'll give you an example as to how important the pass is that on Sunday's game between Hamilton and Toronto, Hamilton ran the ball seven times for the entire ball game. You know, it's, you know, yeah, I know the NFL is a pass-happy league, but it's not often you're going to see a team in the NFL run the ball seven times over the course of a 60-minute contest. The fields are bigger, obviously. The two-down situation, 12 men on the field. But the big thing about Canada, and one of the things that I've learned, you know, and it's, you know, interesting is the fact that, you know, you don't have those big monster offensive linemen that you have in the NFL. It's not saying that you don't have, you know, the 300-pounder types or anything like that, but, you know, the guys are more agile. The linemen are a bit more agile than you see in the NFL in the sense that they're not as big as you see. You know, you've got guys that are about maybe 285, 295. You know, you've got a couple of 300-pounders here and there, but it's not like, you know, the NFL where your average offensive line is tipping the scales at about 305. So it's all about agility and about quickness in the Canadian Football League. You're right that, you know, that there are players that have succeeded, you know, in Canada compared to the NFL. Flutie is, you know, a pretty good example of that. You know, mentioned Warren Moon's success. You know, Cameron Wake of the Miami Dolphins was a perennial all-star in the CFL before coming to the NFL. He's been one of the game's premier defensive ends over the past 5-6 years. So it can work. And at the same time, you know, there are guys that come over from Canada and it doesn't work. Daron Carter, Chris Carter's son, was with the Indianapolis Colts. You know, did not work out there with him. Got cut a couple of years ago. Now he's back in Canada with Saskatchewan. One guy to take a look for in fantasy football, Darrell Walker. He's with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Had a monster year in Canada last year. Was ranked in the top five in receptions, yards, and touchdowns. He's bidding to make a look in the NFL. He's got the skill set to do it, and he's one of those guys you might want to take a look at. I know you've got Mike Evans, obviously. You've got Deshaun Jackson. But Darrell Walker is the kind of ball player that might sneak in and become a wide receiver three. And if you're in a deeper league, he's one of those guys you might want to take a closer look at as training camp begins.
Yeah, in my article for the draft kit, which I'm finishing up now, I think Jameis Winston has a chance of being drafted as an eighth or ninth or a tenth highest quarterback. Not pick, but probably the eighth or ninth or tenth highest quarterback, maybe even a little later. I think he can be a top five, maybe even a top three quarterback. And one of the hot takes that I put on it is, don't be surprised if Jameis Winston outscores Drew Brees this year. Now, I realize I'm going out on a limb there, but that Tampa Bay offense looks pretty intriguing, and I think Winston's going to do a lot of throwing there. Our editor told me to go back to the drawing board and find the statistical evidence to prove that Winston's going to get those opportunities, and it's not easy to do that necessarily, but it's my feeling at least, and I'm hoping I can put together a statistical argument for it, that Winston has a chance to be a really you know, to jump into that upper echelon guy, and you don't have to pay a high pick for him. I really think he's going to probably be drafted between the 8th and 10th quarterback, which means, you know, you're talking, what, 12th or, you know, somewhere around 10, 12th round, something like that. But you have a guy who has a chance to be drafted like the 10th best quarterback, but could end up being top three. And the things you just said kind of are the reasonings why I'm feeling that way.
Yeah, I think that Winston has a very good chance of being a top 10 quarterback. I think he has potential to be a top 5 quarterback this season. You know, like you mentioned, that offense in Tampa Bay is explosive. You know, you mentioned Evans, you've got Walker, you've got DeSean Jackson. Doug Martin, if he's healthy, is going to be a solid 3-down back who can do damage off the backfield as a receiver. You've got tight end, whose name slips me, you know, who had a pretty good year as well. So when you look at the tight end, when you look at the offense at Tampa Bay, there's some explosiveness. And when you look at the NFC North, it's not as if you've got a lot of elite defenses. You know, Carolina is still a good defense, but, you know, it's not as elite as it was a couple of years ago when they won the NFC Championship. The Falcons, obviously, you know, when you saw what we saw in the Super Bowl, you know, can be susceptible to passing games. And the Saints, you know, they're the Saints, you know, they're for the For years, the Saints have been, you know, a source of, hey, in DFS, you're stacking up against whoever's playing the Saints, or if you've got a quarterback in, you know, regular fantasy football, even if it's a QB2, you're probably leaning towards that guy. Your QB1 has a tough matchup because, wait, he's facing the Saints. So I think that there is a very good chance you can see Jameis Winston have a very monster year. I think that he is still currently flying under the radar right now, but I think that come December, when we start looking back at this, I think that Jameis Winston is going to have a year to where come 2018, this guy's going to be a first-round pick.
Yeah, I think there's a possibility that absolutely. And the tight end that had the good year last year was Cameron Brate, but they also signed,
yeah,
drafted O.J. Howard. So you really shouldn't expect a lot from a rookie tight end, but the guy can make some plays. So Brate's there from last year. Howard is a new guy there. So there's just a lot of offensive weapons in Tampa Bay, and I'm intrigued by what they could possibly do. They even have Jacquizz Rodgers, who can kind of catch the ball out of the backfield. Who knows what kind of role he's going to play? You got Charles Sims still there, Doug Martin, rumors of him possibly being traded. But, yeah, Tampa Bay is an interesting offense, but so I'm intrigued by it. But anyway, let's get back to some waiver wire and some baseball stuff here. Let me ask you about some of the hot players so far. I want to see, as we get the All-Star voting is, I believe, finished up now, but we're getting closer and closer to the middle part of the season here, 4th of July weekend, everything, the All-Star game is coming up. I want to ask you about some of the hot and cold players over the last 2 or 3 weeks and see if you are buying into them. I'm not going to ask you about Aaron Judge or Cody Bellinger. I mean, at this point, we have to buy into them. But a guy that you were really high on, and I want to ask you about him as far as in dynasty leagues, keeper leagues. Jose Ramirez has been one of the hottest players over the last 3 weeks in all of baseball. I look at it from a points league perspective because that tells you how well he's hitting as far as singles, doubles, triples, home runs, stolen bases. That tells you everything because it gives you points for everything. Jose Ramirez has 4 home runs over the last 3 weeks. He's stolen 3 in bases. He's hitting over 400. He scored 104 points in the standard typical scoring league. You were high on Jose Ramirez coming into the season. You've talked about him in previous years. No matter how much we hype him, he doesn't seem to get anywhere near the amount of hype as he deserves. He's one of the better all-around players, and yet it seems like he's still a good value. Are you fully buying into Jose Ramirez now in keeper leagues where you would actually target him and go out and trade for him with the idea that he'll be part of your future if you have a dynasty team?
I think he's getting close to that point where you have to start looking at him as a player you can rely on over the course of the long haul. His position eligibility is a huge strength in the fact that, you know, you can play him in multiple spots. I think that really works in his favor. It's definitely been on a tear up late. You know, you certainly, you know, have to accept the fact the reason why the Indians are beginning to look a bit better right now after being sluggish for so long, you know, into the season is the fact that Ramirez has really been the one hitter that has carried them right now. They've got a good matchup against Texas today. You get Corey Kluber, who looks like he's getting back in the form. So I would look at Ramirez as a guy that, you know, I'm not quite there yet to say that, you know, he's someone that he's a slam dunk keeper in keeper dynasty leagues. But if you've got that one spot and you're looking to the side as to what to choose between a ball player who gives you so-so numbers at a strong position like outfield, or do you choose a guy like a Jose Ramirez who's got position eligibility across the board? He's got second base and third base eligibility right now. And like I said, you know, his June has been sizzling. You know, 371, five home runs, 10 RBI. He's got, get this, extra base hits in the month of June. 19 of his 39 hits have been for extra bases this month. And that's the reason why he's now hitting 322. You have 12 homers, 36 ribbies. He's going to exceed his total from last season. He's on pace for 25 home runs this year. Plus, he still has an outside chance at 20 stolen bases. So when you look at the fact that he's also 24 years old, yeah, I think that we're awful close to getting into the conversation of saying Jose Ramirez is a keeper, because you weren't expecting this kind of power from this guy, especially a guy that's 5'9", 190. You don't expect that. But when you look at everything that's put together with Ramirez, there's no reason to think that, you know, this guy can't stay together 4, 5, 6 years of numbers like this. And those guys, particularly in middle infield, are pretty damn hard to keep and pretty damn hard to find. Got Ramirez, yeah, you're holding on to him, but you're also beginning to think that, you know, this guy also gets on base nearly 38% of the time. He's got a 934 OPS. Yeah, you're starting to think it's high time that maybe we start thinking long and hard about Jose Ramirez being a top-tier ball player.
Let me ask you about a guy that lives in your neck of the woods, George Springer. Last 3 weeks, he's got 8 home runs, batting 314. Oddly, I've always had an up-and-down relationship with George Springer. I drafted him as a prospect. I liked the power-speed combination that he offers. But Keith Law was never very high on him. He was afraid that he may not be able to translate his skills from college to the pro game because he had a little bit of a hitch. He's always been a big strikeout guy. He's struggled to stay healthy, which is another factor altogether. But yet now, he's having a monster year, and yet he's not running. So he's somehow managing to hit a lot of home runs. He's been on a hot streak. He's one of the two or three biggest home run hitters of over the last 3 weeks. The question is, A, is he going to stop running altogether? Is he playing injured, or is he not running because the Astros don't need to, or is he not running so that he doesn't get injured? My question is, you have to buy into him in your league. That's not really a question. He's having a good season. I fully expect that he's not a guy that we have to ask, are you buying into him in 2017? But my question for you is, going forward, is he an elite guy? Not just a good guy. Is he one of those guys that is he your outfielder one where you trade legitimate assets to have this guy for the next 5 years because he's going to be Jose Bautista over the last 3 or 4 years, who's been just a monster power-hitting outfielder? Is George Springer into that elite class yet? Or is it just he's having a nice half a season? What are your thoughts on George Springer?
I think he's getting toward that class. Yeah, he's not running. He's been caught stealing in all three of his stolen base attempts. But the Astros aren't asking him to steal bases anymore. You know, he is in the leadoff spot because he gives you tremendous power. He also is a guy who has learned over the last season and a half to get on base more consistently. You know, he's hitting .289 right now. He's got a .367 on base percentage. You know, he's got a .952 OPS, and that power is legit. You know, you're looking at a guy that, you know, legitimately has an outside shot at hitting 50 home runs this season. You know, he's got 24 home runs, and here we are on June 29th. So it's safe to say that, you know, he's probably got about, say, maybe on a scale of 100, maybe a 40 to 50% chance of getting to that level. And you'll probably exceed it if he continues hitting the ball the way he has. 337, 11 home runs, 21 RBI, you know, in the month of June. But the thing that also impresses me more is the fact that he's drawn 11 walks. And this is a guy that is really, you know, like you mentioned, up until the second half of this past season, was a guy who you always wondered, you always felt that, you know, he's always going to be a bit of a tease. You know, he's going to get you power, but he's not going to hit for average. He'll steal bases, but, you know, he's never going to give you, you know, the home runs that you expect. There's always that one thing. You know, if you're willing to accept the fact that he's not going to run as much as we thought he would, but is going to give you monster pop, you'll gladly take him. I think that it knocks him down just a bit that he doesn't run, but it's not because he can't. I think that, you know, in the way this Astros lineup is set, running is not a high priority in this lineup. You know, when you look up and down this lineup, you know, you've got guys that, you know, their whole purpose is to mash the daylights out of the ball and put that thing in the Crawford boxes. So I think that if needed, Springer can get you steals, and I wouldn't be surprised if he gives you about, say, maybe 4 to 6 steals in the second half. And the thing is if he does, he continues on these power numbers, it's only going to make him even more dominant. So I think that you're looking at a guy that's been around for a while, and it's hard to forget that it's easy to forget, I should say, that he's only 27 years old. So you're looking at a guy that's starting to hit his stride. And like Ramirez, you know, here's a guy that, you know, you could envision giving you 3 or 4 years of solid numbers, and you can imagine with his power numbers right now, if you put this guy in a 3 spot, and you had Altuve leading off, you'd probably be looking at a heck of a lot more than 52 RBI at this point.
And we're talking hot and cold players. We're going to be getting to the waiver wire here in just a moment with Brandon C. Williams from RotoExperts.com. You can follow him on Twitter at BCWilliams71. I'm your host of the podcast to be named later and the RotoExperts.com Fantasy Sports Show, Chris Mitchell. You can follow me on Twitter at CJMitch73, or you can talk with us on Facebook at a podcast to be named later or the RotoExperts.com Fantasy Sports Show. Always love to procrastinate on Facebook rather than actually accomplish productive work out there. Let me ask you about another player that I was somewhat high on because I just like these players coming into the season. I like guys that produce both home runs and stolen bases. I'm not big on going after the Giancarlo Stantons who just hit homers. I don't love to pick the Billy Hamiltons who can be a difference maker in stolen bases but don't do anything else. I like those guys that give you a little bit of everything. And I try to fill my team with a lot of them because you don't want just a couple of them if you can help it. If you're going to go that way, I kind of feel like you need to fill your roster with all of them so that when a guy isn't hitting for power, someone else maybe is picking you up and vice versa. If you're not stealing a lot, if one guy isn't getting on base or isn't stealing bases, then the other ones do because you don't know for sure that these kind of guys that give you both are going to give it to you on a week-to-week basis, but you do know you'll get it over the entire season. So I kind of like to fill my roster with a lot of these types of guys, and then, of course, however the draft falls, I pick the one trick ponies as well, of course. But I try to fill my team with guys who do a little bit of everything, and this is one of the guys that I targeted this year. Lorenzo Cain didn't start all that well. It was speculated that he might be a trade target as the deadline drew closer, but Kansas City's really playing well now, so maybe they'll continue to go for a run of this, and maybe he stays with them for the entire season. That's something we can get into once the rumors start flying and when we know what the heck the Royals are going to be doing as we get closer and closer to the actual trade deadline. But over the last 3 weeks, he's got 6 home runs. He's stolen 2 bases, batting .357. He's back out of whatever that kind of cool spell he was early in the season. What are your thoughts on Lorenzo Cain for 2017? And do you like him as a keeper guy? I've never loved Lorenzo Cain, but again, I like that he does a little bit of everything. What's your read on Cain, both now and in the future?
Right now, I think that you look at what he's done in the month of June, 8 of his 10 home runs have come this month. He's driven in 17 runs. He's batted .344, and as you mentioned, he's a guy who gets on base and puts work in as far as steals are concerned. Perfect 14 for 14 in stolen bases. Like you mentioned, the Royals are playing much better. They've announced recently that they're not going to have a fire sale for any of their guys. They're going to just hunker down and do what they can to compete in the AL Central. And if Cain's continuing to hit like this, they're going to have a say as to who wins that division. Right now, I think that he's a guy you can certainly rely on at the end for the remainder of the season. He's another guy who looks like he's on pace for a 2020 year. Looks like he'll probably get, if he continues at this pace, he'll probably get just over 20 home runs, maybe 21, 22 stolen bases. It looks like he'll probably eclipse the 30 mark. Probably look at someone who'll get about, say, 31 to 33 steals. So you certainly want a guy like that. And if you're trying to compete and trying to get Lorenzo Cain, you're going to have to pay a very stiff price. Long term, I'm not as in love with him as I would be in a one-year league. He's 31 years old, and I tend to get a little leery about ball players, you know, once they get to their 30s, and these are guys, and especially ball players that rely on stolen bases, those guys, you know, you tend to get a little leery as you get as they get older. He's more of a fringe guy to me as far as keeper dynasty league is concerned. I think he's one of those ball players that, you know, you could throw back out there and probably have about, say, a 70% chance of getting it back in the first couple of rounds, depending on the number of keepers that you have. But for the remainder of the season, I like Kane. He's a guy who gets on base pretty well, 358, 815 OPS. And again, you know, he's not a monster hitter like a George Springer as far as power is concerned, but you're not going to hang anything up there thinking that this guy is going to jack it out, because he's got surprising pop. You know, he went on his home run tear. He's cooled off a bit. Hasn't had a home run his last 11 games, but, you know, here's a guy that, you know, can get on another tear like that as easily as he did the first part of the month. So for the remainder of the season, if you've got Lorenzo Cain, he's certainly a guy that's going to help your chances as far as winning your league or getting into the playoffs, however it is. But if you're in a keeper dynasty league, you're out of it, and someone pitches you for Lorenzo Cain, I'd probably listen, because with the way Cain has been playing, especially in the last 6 weeks or so, he will probably net you a pretty nice reward when it comes to prospects or younger ball players that just really haven't cut their teeth yet in the bigs.
Let me also ask you about some of the players that are surprising on a yearly level here. Corey Dickerson has 17 home runs. He's batting .333 on the season. I'm not talking the last couple weeks or so. On the season, he's batting .333, even though he struck out 67 times. Corey Dickerson has always been able to hit a little bit. He's never really even been on my radar, because I never thought of him as a relatively special player. If he was at the end of a draft, maybe I'd grab him as a flyer. But he's got 17 homers. He's batting .333, which puts him essentially in the hunt for the batting title. I don't know. I guess my question is, can he continue to hit over 300? Which would, if he doesn't really run, but if you are a big time impact guy at the batting average category and you're providing 30 home runs, that's pretty nice. What's your thoughts on Corey Dickerson? Is this just a nice half season, or should we start to actually give him legitimate consideration for trading in years of the league to try to make that push for the title? And is he starting to establish himself as at least a full time keeper type of guy?
We talked about Dickerson last month, and at the time we were thinking that, you know, it's kind of wait and see. You know, he was hitting the ball pretty well at the time, and you're thinking that, you know, he's going to continue hitting like this before eventually he cools off. He hasn't cooled off yet. You know, 5 home runs, 14 ribbies, a .316 average this month. It kind of pales in comparison to what guys like Springer and Ramirez are doing, but still a very good month for Corey Dickerson. Right now he's got 17 home runs, 39 ribbies. He's still in the, you know, very much in the hunt for the AL batting round at .333. The thing that you like about Dickerson is the simple fact that when you plug him in as your DH, when the Rays do that, all this guy has to do is concentrate on hitting. You know, it's not saying he's not a bad outfielder, because he's not. But if you've got a guy who hits like Dickerson, or he's hitting the way Dickerson has this season, you know, you just want to make this guy as comfortable as possible. It just means plugging him in at DH, telling him, hey, you get 3 to 5 times each night to go out and hit the ball as hard as humanly possible. And if he's capable of doing that, you keep him in there. The thing is that, you know, Dickerson really crept up on people, because even though he hit 24 home runs in 2016, he had a .400 batting average, you know, base percentage was bad, his OPS was pretty low. You know, we're kind of on the mindset that, you know, the power came from Coors, but the discipline at the plate sure as heck didn't. That's changed. The one question that you worry about with Dickerson is because of the fact that, you know, he's not a guy who walks a lot. And guys like that, you know, if they're batting average, you know, if they get a slump, that means their batting average and OPS are going to go down very quickly compared to a ball player who, even though they might be struggling at the plate, is able to get on base at a fairly high percentage. You got like a Freddie Freeman, for example. But when you look at Dickerson, I think that he's able to hold on to this the remainder of the year. The Rays are surprisingly good offensively, and Dickerson's the reason behind that. If in a one-year league, if you've got Dickerson, you know, you're holding on to him, especially if you've got a run for the postseason. But I think that if, you know, in a one-year league, you know, you're going to have a lot of guys banging your door for Dickerson if you've got him and you've got nothing to worry about or you've already started looking for the fantasy football season. In the keeper league, I think that he's a sell-high kind of guy. It's not to say that I don't think Dickerson, you know, will just have a one-year wonder type year, because I don't think so, but he is still a sell-high type ball player, because to me, in order to really prove that you're capable of doing this, you know, being consistent, you know, you need to do this over the course of a couple of years or so. I think that he's a hot name right now, and if you're out of it in a keeper dynasty league and you've got Dickerson, I would certainly be peddling him to a contender, especially one who's got a, you know, a stash of young ball players that you could probably hold on to in hopes of getting something in September, but looking forward for down the road, whereas this guy's going to get Dickerson for the remainder of the year, you know, hoping that he keeps, you know, current pace he's on. But, you know, he's the guy who would end up with the Dickerson goes into a skid.
A guy that I completely overlook and ignore, and maybe it's because he's in Miami and I don't really pay a lot of attention to Marlins players in general, but there are a few, I guess, that are values. Marcell Ozuna, just I always looked at him as an afterthought, as an also-ran, but he had a nice season in 2016, and he's got 20 home runs, and he's batting .315 this year with 54 RBIs and 45 runs scored. If there's ever a guy that's a really nice value that there just isn't a lot of hype about, at least in my mind, and I think it's league-wide because we'd hear more talk about him and he'd be more on my radar if people were talking about him in anywhere close to what he deserves. Again, 20 home runs, .315. Is Marcell Ozuna a really good player that nobody cares about? And again, if we're not just yearly leagues, but what do you see him, how valuable do you think he is in keepers going forward? Do you think he continues to do this over the next three seasons?
Ozuna is similar to Dickerson in the sense that he didn't have a pretty good year last year. He finished strong, but it wasn't a year that, you know, that you were expecting out of him. He struggled all season long, and going into most drafts, it was kind of an afterthought. You know, you kind of figured that, yeah, you'll get the 20 home runs or so out of Ozuna. You'll probably get about 75, 80 RBI, but you're not expecting much beyond that. You know, and, you know, for guys who picked up on him, you know, you get 43 home runs. He's projected 43 home runs or 100 team ribbies with a .315 batting average and a .943 slugging percentage. What's very odd, and this is a very true story, is that the keeper league that I'm in, I traded Marcell Ozuna for Corey Dickerson. Don't figure that one. You know, and it was a straight-up deal right before the start of the season. You know, guys like, you know, I know that you kind of like Dickerson, you know, but, you know, I know you're, you know, Ozuna's a fringe outfielder of yours. Would you be interested in a straight-up trade? And it's like, yeah, let's go ahead and do it. Why the hell not? It's worked out well for both of us. Ozuna, I think, is a guy who is really going to me, is going to have more long-term value than Dickerson or even the aforementioned Lorenzo Cain. This guy's got major pop in his bat, and it would be scary what his numbers would look like if he were playing in a more hitter-friendly park compared to where he is in Miami right now. Yeah, obviously Miami doesn't get a lot of attention. The Marlins aren't playing well, but, you know, he has quietly been one of the better fantasy surprises this season. I think he continues at this pace. You know, again, he's only 26 years old. He kind of took a step back again last season, finished the season strong, and he has carried that over. The thing with Ozuna is similar to what we're seeing, you know, with Springer, what we talked about with him, getting on base more. And that's really the bottom line, you know, with guys, you know, guys that have the kind of skill set. You know, this is a guy that, you know, if you look at each of his years in the bigs, you know, .303, .317, .308, .321 on base percentage, now very below average. Now he's at .378. You know, can he continue at that pace? I've got no reason to think that he can't. So I would believe that, you know, Ozuna's a guy that's going to be able to continue these numbers the rest of the regular season. To me, I think that when you talk about All-Stars, I think this guy is deserving of an for a roster spot on the All-Star team. Certainly wouldn't hurt you, considering the fact the All-Star game is in Miami. But long haul, I like Ozuna. I think that this is a guy that could probably give you a nice stretch of 30 home run seasons, 90 to 100 RBI. He's not going to steal much. But if he's proven that he can get on base at that kind of percentage, 370, you know, even a 360, you know, 360 to 380 range, if he's capable of giving you that, then I think that he's a guy that's going to be a solid ball player, especially with the kind of power that he has. And I would not be surprised if somewhere in the next 2 or 3 years, he is a hot name that the Marlins would consider trading if they're still scuffling and money issues are still in question.
Let me ask you about a couple of, I guess we call them veterans or close to veterans in the case of Mookie Betts, but I want to ask you first about Andrew McCutchen. I thought in Keeper Dynasty Leagues you should have traded him before the 2015 season to get maximum value. I thought he would be good in 2015, but that his decline would start in 2016. It actually looked like I was right. In 2015, he had 23 home runs, stole 11 bases, batted .292 with a .401 on-base percentage. 2016, he had some injuries during the year, but he didn't miss a lot of games. He played 153, but I do remember anecdotally that it seemed like he was playing a lot of days with some nagging injuries. He just played through them. He still hit the home runs, 24 in 2016, so that was his second-best career high. So the home runs were still there compared to previous years. Third highest, I'm sorry. He hit 31 in 2012, hit 25 in 2014, but he only stole 6 bases and he batted .256. That batting average drop was significant. His on-base dropped all the way to .336. So 2016 looked like maybe the decline was coming, and so maybe I was looking right. Well, now that we're in 2017, he's already got 14 home runs, so he's on his way to that mid-20s range that he usually hits. He's already got 6 stolen bases, so he's on his way to 12 or 15, which is down from his best seasons, but it's still right there in the meat of what he usually can do going forward. So 15 to 20 steals. He's only batting .270, which, again, is 20 or 30 or even 50 points lower than what he's done in his best seasons, but his on-base is back up to .353. Is McCutchen in decline, or was 2016 kind of an injury-plagued season that he played through? He's hot over the last 3 weeks. I think he's got 8 home runs in the last 3 weeks, or maybe it was 6 home runs in the last 3 weeks. What do you make of Andrew McCutchen? Do you buy him for 2017? Do you buy into him as maybe an affordable, still high-end player? What do you make of where Andrew McCutchen is in his career?
I think he's more of a second-tier outfielder at this point. He's never going to be the stolen base guy that he was a few years ago. But I think that, you know, he did obviously go off to a slow start, batting averages up due in part to a .376 average during the month of June. But when I look at him, McCutchen is a guy who is probably going to settle in and being a 25 to 30 home run guy, maybe 10 stolen bases, and the batting average hovering around, say, the .265 to .270 range. It's not bad. Don't get me wrong. You would certainly take that for your third or fourth outfielder. But I think that, you know, the years of McCutchen being an elite, you know, top 25 draft pick is, you know, those days are gone. At 30 years old, you know, he is still, you know, he still has, you know, productive years ahead of him. I still think that he'll be a good ball player, but he's one of those guys to where, you know, he's not the slam dunk keeper that he once was. I think that, you know, you could grab a guy, you know, if you're asking me to project over the next 5 years, who would I want, Andrew McCutchen or Marcell Ozuna? I would probably say Ozuna because of the youth, because of the power potential. Whereas with McCutchen, you have to wonder what, you know, to me, I think that part of the reason why he's not running more is the fact that he wants to preserve those legs. You know, the guy does play center field. He does cover a lot of ground. I think there's also a lot of pressure on the guy as well, you know, considering the fact that, you know, he is the face of that Pirates franchise. They have struggled this season, but still, you know, surprisingly, still in the hunt, the NL Central. I know the trade rumors have dogged him all throughout the offseason. There's, like, the popular rumor about him going to Washington, or talks about him going to San Francisco. But, you know, the bottom line of the question is that I still think that he is a good but not great outfielder fantasy-wise. I think that, you know, he is someone that, you know, you could still rely on to give you some pop. Any stolen bases that he gets, that you get from him, will probably be bonuses at this point because he's no longer the guy that's going to fly around and get you 25, 30 steals. But if you're looking at a long-term keeper, I would probably say he's someone you probably could keep. But if you dropped him, I don't think anyone would be in total shock. I don't think there's, like, you know, the rest of the league would be, oh, my God, he dropped that Andrew McCutchen. No, I don't think you you're going to have anything along those lines. So, good ball player, still productive, but as far as him being that elite guy, that's no longer the case.
And also keep in mind for anyone out there listening, we're not saying drop Andrew McCutchen in dynasty leagues or even expanded keeper leagues.
God, no.
If you mean it in limited, you know, you keep two or three guys, maybe
yeah.
McCutchen doesn't qualify. But if you're keeping 8, 10, 20 guys, of course you're keeping him then. I just want to make sure nobody's confused out there
exactly. That
we think he's declined that much. Right, okay. Yeah, I don't want anyone
yeah.
thinking that we're throwing dirt on this guy.
It's great that you clarified that.
Yeah, you know, in those leagues where you're keeping only the elite of the elite, that's what you're talking about. I don't want to be confused
exactly.
and thinking that we have no clue what we're talking about on here. In very
exactly.
limited keeper formats, I mean, a lot of people play in
yeah.
that. I play in a couple of those where you keep four guys, and it's tough. Do you keep a pitcher or do you keep four bats? Do you keep three bats and a one pitcher? What if you have those elite pitchers? You know, you get into some tough decisions when you have three or four keepers if you're a good team. Because maybe the bad teams, they have plenty of room to add keepers. But if you're one of the good teams at the top of your league and you can only keep four, a lot of times you've got 8 or 9 or 10 options that are legitimate, and then you got to weigh bats versus arms, and that's when McCutchen becomes a tough decision. And so just to clarify, so people don't think that we're kicking McCutchen to the curb. We're actually my question was, is he a buy low almost? That's sort of what I was getting into. And at that perspective, from a keeper perspective, it's maybe not.
In a keeper perspective, I think that he is a buy low. I think that, you know, if you're in a league where you keep 4 to 6 ball players, certainly he's a guy that you would probably consider up as keeping. But, yeah, you know, like you mentioned, you know, if you're in a league where you're keeping 2 to 4 ball players per team, he's probably on the fringes of that in a 10 or 12 team league. You know, but if you're in a deeper league, you know, you've got 16 teams and you keep 4 players, yeah, you're certainly keeping McCutchen. You're not going to drop him out there. But as far as him being that slam dunk, top tier guy, you know, is he a ball player that, you know, Bryce Harper, Jose Altuve caliber, Mike Trout kind of keeper? No, he's not. He's not. 2 or 3 years ago, he was certainly in that conversation. But right now, he's not. You know, but it's not to say that, you know, he's a bad ball player or anything like that. You know, you certainly would love to have a McCutchen on your team. And he would certainly carry you, you know, as far as he can, as far as your team can go this season.
I'm talking with Brandon C. Williams from RotoExperts.com. We're going to wrap up a couple of these players and then get the waiver wire report and get Brandon out of here. last question I want to ask you about Mookie Betts. 31 home runs, 26 stolen bases, only caught 4 times. That percentage is fantastic. He also batted .318 with an on-base of .363 last season, was an MVP candidate. Everyone likes to vote, find out really what the MVP vote is these days is, how do you justify not giving it to Mike Trout? That's essentially what the MVP vote is now. And Mookie Betts was the leading guy of people trying to find a reason not to give it to Mike Trout. And 31, 26, 318, it's a nice argument. He does. As a Red Sox fan, I would love to be able to say that Betts deserves the MVP, but he didn't. He didn't deserve it over Mike Trout. But he's at least in the – you can make an argument for it, even though it's a pretty poor one. This year, he started off slow. He isn't having the kind of season maybe that people thought. But that's my question, because I own him in a multiple of leagues. And it's been my opinion that Chris Bryant and Mookie Betts, I got them both in a trade a few years back, so I always align the two. I've thought that both of them were having disappointing years. Well, Chris Bryant is still hitting – he still has 16 home runs and 6 stolen bases. So to call that disappointing is really having some pretty high expectations. And while Mookie Betts started off poorly and the batting average is down, he's only batting .272, whereas last year he batted .318. The year before that he batted .291. But he's got 12 home runs and 12 stolen bases. So far this season, he's on his way to 25-25 with a .270 to maybe .290 batting average. It's hard to really say that that's a disappointing year, and it's not that much of a drop off from last year. I think going into the year, you should have thought that Mookie Betts was going to drop off. You can't expect almost a 30-30 every single year from basically anybody. Even Mike Trout, while he hits the 30 homers, isn't guaranteed 30 steals, and he does bat over .300. So to expect 30-30, 300 is really asking a lot. So I kind of did expect Mookie Betts to have a drop-off season. I didn't expect him to be 18-18, but to think that he might get to 30-30 again, I think was probably expecting or demanding more than is realistic. But he's 12-12 right now, home runs and steals, and he's batting .272. I almost feel like, based on expectations, that he's a buy low. Is he a buy low in the yearly league and in dynasty league? Has he taken a little bit of a hit, even though he's on pace for probably ending up 25-25? He could theoretically even have a better season this year than last year, even though he started poorly. What are your thoughts on the value and the perception of Mookie Betts right now?
I think that those that look at Mookie Betts' numbers and they see, oh, he's quote-unquote batting .272, those are the guys that you want to hit and catch him and buy on Betts low. He's still hitting for power. He's still getting on base at a pretty good percentage, .347. He's still stealing bases. He's still on pace for 25-25, like you mentioned. Here's a guy that I would gladly take and put on my roster. Here's a guy that, you would strongly consider. If you're keeping three or four guys in your team, each year, Mookie Betts is going to be one of those guys. He's not hitting for, the average that he hit last season. He's not, putting that kind of production up. But he's still getting on base. He's still hitting for power. Is Mookie Betts a .318 hitter like he was last season? Maybe, maybe not, but you're still not going to sneeze over .272. And you have to remember this guy hit .291 and .291 prior to last season. So if he gives his batting average up to .280, it's really not that big of a drop. And honestly, I don't think there's too big of a drop right now. His OPS is .822 right now compared to where it was last season at .897. The slugging percentage is at .475, where it was at .534 last year. But if you look at his previous numbers, the numbers that he has this season are more in line with what you expect out of Betts. He is still a 2020 ball player. And again, youth working in his favor. He's only 24 years old. So he's a guy that, that's just getting towards his prime years. So Betts is a cornerstone guy to me. If you can buy low on Mookie Betts, I highly recommend that you go out and do it right now. Stop what you're doing. If you're at work, you're with your girlfriend, whatever, I don't care. If you're driving, stop. Pull over to the side. Go get Mookie Betts. Keep a dynasty league. This guy is a cornerstone type to me. He's not the Mike Trout type cornerstone, but to me, he's in that second tier because I think that, there is still another 2006. He's got, if you look at him over the next 5 years or so, I think that he's got at least one or 2 years where he's going to produce numbers similar to 2016, and that makes him a ball player that you certainly want. And again, even with what you're getting out of Betts this season, you're still going to end up with a guy who gets about 25 home runs, drives in 85, and gets around 25 to 28 stolen bases. So those guys aren't easy to get. So I'm definitely going after Betts if I can. And if I'm a Betts owner, I'm certainly not listening to you if you pulled over to the side and said, hey, I had this epiphany and I want to get Mookie Betts off of you. That happened. Start driving.
Yeah. We're talking with Brandon C. Williams here. Brandon, you only got a couple more minutes, so get right to it. Give us your hot and cold bats. Give us your hot and cold pitchers. In other words, give us your waiver wire report.
Waiver wire report. Let's get to it. Let's go ahead and start with a guy at a premium position that just came up and showed us potential. That is Franklin Barreto of the Oakland Athletics. Their top hitting prospect came up, did hit a home run last weekend. He's going to be a guy that certainly is going to be sought after in on waiver wires. His ownership percentage shot 30%, like almost overnight. Another guy you want to take a look at, Michael Taylor of the Nationals. He's starting to hit the ball fairly well. Here's a guy that can steal bases, hit home runs. He's kind of like Mookie Betts if you look at Mookie Betts as a .250 hitter. But still, Taylor is still young enough to where he could put together some pretty good numbers for you. Sonia, I'm going to strongly take a look at Blake Snell of the Tampa Bay Rays is backed up. Looks like he's got over whatever issues that he's had early on. Looks like the Rays are going to continue keeping him in the rotation. If you can grab him and someone dropped him, I'd certainly look at getting him back. One interesting prospect to take a look at, Luis Castillo, Reds prospect. That's not what, he's looked rough in his first couple of starts, 6.15 ERA, 1.72 whip, but the thing that I'm looking at is strikeouts, 10 Ks in nine innings. You know, better at a strikeout rating. You know, I think the deeper leagues or NL only is where you don't have a minor league system. Castillo's kind of a speculation grab, in my opinion. Carlos Rondon, guess who showed back up? Rondon showed back up. Two starts already. 11 strikeouts in 10 innings. He did get a quality start last time out. He is already on the 74% of leagues, so he is well out of my percentage, but that means that there are a handful of leagues that he's available. Rondon, you remember, this guy is a strikeout machine when he's capable of getting there. He's capable of getting there. Actually, I'm looking at his projected stats. Actually, his first start, 5 innings, took the loss, walked six, struck out 2. So Rondon is a guy that, the strikeouts are there, but you're probably have to be patient with him if you do own him. Another guy who's getting some looks, as far as arms, Luis Perdomo up the San Diego Padres. Padres have an interesting array of arms. Perdomo has looked pretty solid. He's won 3 out of his last 4 starts and has allowed 6 runs in those starts. He's decent amount of strikeouts, 14 strikeouts. It's decent, not great, but if you're looking for a guy that's going to get you a decent whip and get you a handful of wins at this point, Perdomo probably is a guy that you could probably get off the blocks. Starting to get a little bit of traction now. The Cubs second baseman, he also has eligibility in the outfield as well. It looks as if, he could get some looks here and there since he's been called up. The pop hasn't been there yet, but he's starting to get, starting to get a feel back for himself right now, hitting 252 right now, 10 homers, 23 RBI. I think that he is someone that, is going to be a hot name to go after if he's available in your league. A guy that, we kind of soured off of is now coming back, Keon Broxton of the Brewers. He's now back in the lineup full-time after they sent down Lewis Brinson. He's been in your ball fairly well, 249 average, 13 home runs, but he's got 14 stolen bases. So he's, again, kind of like a bet in the sense that, he's not going to give you a lot of batting average. And if you're an OBP league, he's not going to give you much on that, but he will give you home runs. He will give you steals, and those guys are not hard. They are not easy to find, especially as we get to this point. One more guy, and I touched on him last week, Lindy Rue of the Dodgers. Has gotten back in a rotation. He has looked fairly solid in each of his starts. He's got 2 no decisions in his last 2 starts, but he's looked pretty solid. You look at his last start against the Angels, he struck out 8, walked 1 over 3rd innings and allowing just 2 runs. So I think that Rue might be a time, it might be time to revisit him. One more before we get out of here on the list is Cameron Maben of the Los Angeles Angels. Each week it just seems like no one wants to pick up on this guy, and it's kind of hard to understand why, considering the fact that he's got 24 stolen bases in 25 attempts. He's got a decent 360 batting, a 360 on base percentage, a 257 batting average. The pop obviously isn't what you would expect, from a guy that big, but he does have 6 home runs, but stolen bases are something that you definitely want to grab. And the fact is that, he's still available at 31% of leagues. It's a bit surprising.
Real quick before you get out of here, Keon Broxton's getting a lot of hype. I see him mentioned on MLB Network. I see him articles written about him on a variety of different sites. He's got 13 home runs, 14 stolen bases. He's only batting .249, but when you're getting those kinds of home runs and stolen bases, the batting average, we can pretty much just kind of give it a wink and a nod and ignore it. But I look at the Milwaukee offense. And granted, they're in contention, so if you're playing well, you're going to play. But if they fall out of contention or just someone else plays, they've got Ryan Braun, Hernan Perez, they've got Domingo Santana, they've got Lewis Brinson in the minors, they've got a couple other prospects that could contribute. I mean, this is a team that has a lot of outfielders that could potentially have at bats. Is Broxton, with his 13 homers and 14 stolen bases this year and his center field defense, is he absolutely the Brewers' full-time guy the rest of the year? And do you like him because of that? Because I just wonder, for one thing, he's got 103 strikeouts in 75 games already. I just wonder if he's going to remain a full-time player all season. Because if he is, I love those numbers. But I just, with so many potential opportunities to steal at bats from him, I'm just concerned investing any real stuff into him because I am concerned that the at bats are going to continue.
I think that the Mets will continue. I think that what they had Brent Senio, obviously he struggled badly in his first taste of the bigs. I think that as long as they are in contention, Broxton is going to be their everyday outfielder. So I think you could be comfortable in going after this guy and keeping him. I think the only reason that he would not be would be if he's injured. I don't think they're going to see Brinson up until September unless Broxton goes down with an injury. You know, you mentioned, you know, this is a very deep Brewers outfield. You still have Brady Clark as one of their prospects. You know, Hernan Perez can play the outfield. You mentioned Domingo Santana. You know, they've got a ton of prospects, and they're going to eventually become a logjam in that outfield. One of those guys are probably going to be moved somewhere down the road, if not, you know, this offseason, probably the next year or two. One of those guys are going to be moved in order to get a bigger arm into that rotation. But I don't think it'll be Broxton. I think that Broxton's defense is, you know, approaching Gold Glove caliber. If this guy can get 245, 250, get off base on around league average and still give you 25 home runs, 30 stolen base potential, he's going to stay in that lineup every day.
Ramsey Williams from RotoExperts.com. You can follow him on Twitter at BCWilliams71. Thanks, my man. Get the heck out of here. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Take it easy. Have a safe and happy 4th and to my Canadian friends. Happy Canada Day this weekend.
Ramsey Williams, who's covering the Canadian Football League for RotoExperts.com, also covers basketball, football, and baseball over at RotoExperts.com. He also appears in a variety of other locations where he gets his articles syndicated from time to time as well. So follow him on Twitter so you know where the heck you can find him, where the heck you can find his writings, at BCWilliams71. That's our podcast for today here on A Podcast to Be Named Later. I am your host, Chris Mitchell. You can follow me on Twitter at CJMitch73. I write articles about minor league prospects and some Dynasty League stuff over at RotoExperts.com. I've got some articles going up there for the football draft kit as well. If you want to follow me, just baseball-related stuff, as well as where you can find access to these podcasts, head on over to MinorLeagueBall.com. I'm going to be hopefully writing more and more articles there, content perspective, but all our podcasts are posted there. And we're going to be doing a new podcast coming up here in hopefully the next week or so called the COD Pod. We're going to talk about the Cape Cod League. So all of you out there who enjoy minor league prospects or amateurs of some kind, the Cape Cod Baseball League is the best amateur league in the country for as far as summer leagues go. And I'm going to be doing a podcast about that as well as hopefully writing up some content for minorleagueball.com for that. So take an eye out on that. Again, follow me on Twitter at CJMitch73 for links. The Cape Cod League is fantastic. You can actually watch it on TV if you're in the Boston area. But you can follow it online. They have a Facebook page where they post a lot of different stuff. If you want to know about the future of Major League Baseball, the Cape Cod League is where you want to be checking out about that. Because the guys who were recently drafted or guys who will be top picks in next year's draft, they play in that league. They use wood bats. It's really – not only is it a good league to watch amateur baseball, but it's an interesting one. They have players come down to the Cape. They live with host families, they get jobs, and then they play baseball like 5 days a week. So they essentially play as many games as major leaguers do, but they live with host families, they help out those families in any way they can, just like any other guest would, and then they also go out and have jobs. If I remember correctly, there was a story about how Mike Trout was on the Cape Cod League, obviously, before he became a superstar, and he was employee of the month, I believe, at a Walmart or some kind of Walmart-like hardware size store. I heard that story. I don't know for sure, but nonetheless, you hear a lot of those kinds of stories on the Cape. They've done some movies about them that really didn't totally do it justice, but we're going to try the best we can to give you a feel and a flavor for what the Cape Cod League is about and also analyze the players, talk about them, and obviously write about them as well. So I'm going to be doing that here in the not-too-distant future. The COD Pod is what I'm calling it, but you'll be able to find links for that. If you want to follow any of our other podcasts on Facebook, you can do that. Again, the RotoExperts.com Fantasy Sports Show page is there, as well as a podcast to be named later. I also do a prospect podcast whenever I can get a good guest on to come talk about minor leaguers. I like to do that. Vince Lara from Baseball America comes on from time to time. Jim Callis, who used to be on Baseball America, now writes for MLB.com or MLB Pipeline, depending on how you refer to them. Two of the better college, two of the better minor league prospect writers in the country for two of the best places to find that, which is MLB.com or MLB Pipeline and Baseball America. So if you want to follow me for that, you can as well. But do that over at a podcast to be named later or the rotoexperts.com fantasy sports show page. I post links as well as rundowns of all of the podcasts. So you know what we talked about and you know when it's aired and you can access the link. You don't have to download anything. You just click the link. It appears on your browser and you can listen to the program. So hopefully you're going to be tuning in and hopefully you'll find us that way. Hopefully you'll become a loyal listener because we really appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. That's our show for today. Hopefully you enjoyed your fantasy fix. And going forward, hopefully you'll stay tuned with us because we look forward to hearing from you. We look forward to talking fantasy with you and look forward to just talking baseball with you. Thanks, everybody. Be good. Enjoy your 4th of July like everyone else is saying.